what the hell is going on with all the fees? And why is everybody talking about Bitcoin shitcoins and NFTs? We're going to pause our reading material today in order to have a guys take episode about why it's not nice to poop in the park. This is Guys Take number 66, Pooping in the Park. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And there's a bit of weather on the blockchain, on the time chain lately. You know, when we talk about the mempool and the fee rate and the backlog of transactions that are vying for space in the time chain, I like to think about it as weather. There's no central authority. It's just kind of this chaotic response to conditions for people all over the world. And there's this raw open market that has no coordinator, in which people are just broadcasting to try to get their data in the chain. There's actually a really, really good read on it that I hadn't thought about in a long time, but it's by Zane Pocock. And it's way back in, it's years ago that we covered this on the show, but it's called Bitcoin's Town Square. And it's basically talking about, it's theorizing or creating an analogy to visualize what the mempool is and what the gossip network or the network that is broadcasting and propagating transactions around the global Bitcoin space, and how everybody has their own mempool. Like they're just, they have this batch of transactions that are waiting to be placed into the Bitcoin chain. And it's a really fascinating article, and I always loved the thought experiment. I think it's a really awesome way to visualize and think about what's happening on the Bitcoin network. But currently, fees are high on the Bitcoin network because there's a huge backlog of data that is trying to get itself stamped into the Bitcoin chain. And now the fees here aren't the problem. The fees right now, last I checked just a little while ago, is like $6 or $7 or something was the median fee for the next block. Now, this is not actually the problem. And I think a lot of people have misunderstood what either they've failed to paint a clear trajectory for themselves for Bitcoin's future, or they're just kind of wrapped up in the fact that that's the most in your face. It's the most like you're directly related to it consequence of what is happening right now that's causing this. But I think people are wrongly suggesting that the high fees are the bad thing that we need to stop. Granted, that's not a very large number of people, but I think there are some who are kind of getting lost in the more important issue. And so what is that issue? Why are the fees so high? Like, what's going on that's causing the backlog on Bitcoin right now? Well, that's where we get to ordinals and inscriptions. Basically, people are stamping JPEGs. They're stamping NFTs into the Bitcoin blockchain, and they are now inscribing shitcoins. There is a new BRC protocol, which is very similar to what they do on Ethereum, to just issue shitcoins, just tokens everywhere. And of course, they're running wild, and now they're bloating the Bitcoin chain, the Bitcoin system, with a bunch of shitcoin data on the Bitcoin chain. Bitcoin is a public good. It is like a public utility. We are all stewards of this chain, of this thing that we need to hold all of the data for, validate all of the data for, and keep a permanent record of in order to know and secure the Bitcoin network for all of the people in the world who need it, to maintain global sound money. It's like a public park, and we are all stewards of keeping this thing in order, of maintaining it, keeping it clean, and making sure it works for the people who need it. Bloating the chain with a bunch of shitcoin data that is not even relevant to Bitcoin consensus is like taking a dump in the park. And now everyone else has to deal with it. Now, a lot of people are making this a much bigger deal than it actually is, at least in my opinion. But there may be something that we can do about it, and I think there is an honest conversation to have about the incentives that have led to this, and that something can actually safely, potentially safely, be done to mitigate some of this behavior. Or at least I think it's worth having the conversation about whether or not the trade-off for some of the decisions that led us here are still worth it. But we have a couple of basics of this situation to cover. Like, people are talking about like the discount on transaction signatures, the UTXO bloat, and we have to understand what these things are. A lot of you may already know, may be aware, but I want to cover them for the people who might not be following all of this. Really quick though, let's thank our sponsors, and then we will get into the meat of it. Swan Bitcoin. If you want to get an IRA that lets you invest in real Bitcoin directly, and that you can set up in moments, Swan Bitcoin is what you are looking for. Not only that, they will have a long-term savings plan, automatic purchase and automatic withdrawal. When I am doing all of the things that I do, I'm just purchasing Bitcoin all the time, and it is automatically being sent to my cold card, to my multi-sig setup. I want you to understand how devastated I am that they are temporarily having to shut down North Carolina access, and now jealous of everybody who is looking from a distance and going like, ha, that sucks for the people in North Carolina. Because this has been a staple of my purchasing Bitcoin forever. Just since Swan started this. You can check them out at my link, and it also helps support the show to let them know that I sent you over there. And it's right there in the description of the show notes. And then the Fold card. Sats back. I just paid my biggest bill that I pay every month. Man, getting those sats back is just magical. And I'll be traveling again very soon with Bitcoin 2023, which, by the way, you can get 10% off those tickets. I'm pretty sure those tickets are about to go up in price. I know there's some last minute people who still don't have tickets. Don't forget to do that. Code Bitcoin Audible gets you a 10% discount. Please don't pay full price. 10% is a chunk. And with the sats you save on your tickets, with the sats you earn using the Fold debit card, and the sats you stack with Swan Bitcoin, you're going to want to put it safely and soundly on your CoinKite cold card. And you get a 9% discount off of that with code Bitcoin Audible. Isn't it convenient that it's always code Bitcoin Audible? It's almost like that was on purpose. You will find all this great stuff right there in the show notes. And with that, let's jump back into today's guy's take. All right, so what are ordinals and inscriptions? So just so you know, this is a... these are loose details as to how this stuff works, because I just read a handful of explanations about this as when it blew up the first time with NFTs on the blockchain, and it just doesn't interest me. It seems kind of irrelevant, and you know, people were paying a lot, and I figured it was going to die down, and it did. It, you know, it had a big spike, and that's probably what we'll see with this whole shitcoin stuff. It'll be another spike, and then it will die down. And if we're considering this a spam attack, which there's a lot of somebody, I think it was Francis Puyo, was sharing out or screenshotting a whole bunch of accounts that were spamming out the exact same messages about how ordinals are, I can't even remember what it was, but it was just shilling this crap. Which might just be somebody paying a bunch of crap accounts, like a bunch of robot accounts or whatever, to, you know, just spam out nonsense and reply to people. But it could legitimately mean that maybe there is some sort of a coordinated attack here, that this is actually someone with funds trying to cause a problem. I personally think it's just a bunch of people in crypto doing what they've always done, and not caring about being good stewards and not really caring about sound money because all he ever wanted to do was gamble on trash. Which I'm not even saying gambling on garbage is a bad thing. You want to gamble on bullshit? That's fine. Go do that. But the idea that you're putting this cost on the sound money foundation of our future is just kind of a shitty thing to do, honestly, in my opinion. I mean, it's not like there's a whole lot of things that we can do about it. Like, we can't censor it. And it's not as if Bitcoin isn't designed to handle spam attacks. But this one is a little bit unique because of how the signature data works and because of a discount that was put in place because of a negative incentive on the front end of this thing that was being corrected. This is why a lot of people are mad and we're like, oh, we need to remove segregated witness, which is just absurd. Anything to quote unquote mitigate or correct this that involves even a soft fork or a hard fork, any fork of any kind, or risks a split in the network, I think is unbelievably foolish. I would much rather just buy another hard drive for my Bitcoin node slightly sooner than I had originally intended. This will all still run on a Raspberry Pi. The sky is not falling. It's not the end of the world. Everybody take a deep breath. It's just shitcoins. Bitcoin is designed to survive a lot worse than this. However, it's not nice to poop in the park, and there might be something we can do about it. First, let's go back to ordinals and inscriptions. Again, this is a brief overview. It's vague, and if there are any details that are wrong, sue me. I'm just trying to share the general idea of what's going on. So, ordinals is literally just a protocol, or it's just a piece of software that has a very explicit set of rules about how to put all of the Satoshis in order. All of the Satoshis that exist. Every Bitcoin that has ever been mined is just broken down into 100 million Satoshis. And then as those UTXOs, as those Bitcoin are being spent and broken up, it just has an order of events in which it is counting down those Satoshis to basically label every single one of them a number. Even though the Bitcoin consensus rules doesn't care, like one Satoshi is no different from another Satoshi, this is attempting to do that. This is a external network that is just creating a arbitrary means by which we are putting them in order. I mean, it could be flipped. Like let's say, you know, for the first 50 Bitcoin that are mined in the Genesis block, is that these would be Satoshis 1 through 500, one through 5 billion. Now, if one Bitcoin is spent from that, that Bitcoin would represent Satoshis 4,900,000,000 up to 5 billion. That it basically counts down the list as transactions are made from that UTXO. So the change address with the 4.9 billion are 1 through 4.9 billion. And so this goes on. When that one original one Bitcoin is spent, then that breaks down again from highest to lowest. But again, that's arbitrary. It could be completely flipped. It could be that the first Bitcoin that you spent is from Satoshi 1 to Satoshi 100 million. It's just a set of rules about putting them in order. And then you can look at the chain and you can be like, oh, I actually have some Satoshis in my UTXO today from in a balance of Bitcoin that I have that are from like block 10,000 or something, you know, way back from 2009. Now, people are saying, or at least I have heard some people suggest, that this destroys or harms the fungibility of Bitcoin. And that's not true at all, because it has nothing to do with Bitcoin. Like, the Bitcoin network itself cannot or does not care which ordinal it has or which numbered Satoshi is in which address. It's just people outside, external to the network consensus rules, valuing one address more than another address, which, you know, you could arguably say like the address itself, or one balance of Bitcoin rather than a different balance. And you could arguably say like that's true of the address itself. Like, you might like want a vanity address that has like guy at the beginning of the address or something like that. And it's not unlike someone valuing, granted, this actually has a different metal content, but let's say the metal content is exactly the same. Someone valuing a quarter from like 1942 over a quarter from today, like a 2023 quarter. It's like, okay, so somebody collects the coins and quote unquote, that coin isn't fungible, but you can still go to the store and it's still just worth a quarter. Same thing here with Bitcoin. It doesn't matter that some random person somewhere gives a crap whether or not they're, you know, it's a high ordinal number or low ordinal number that they're getting in their the sats that they've been sent. It does not affect the fungibility of Bitcoin. So that out of the way. A lot of people are saying ordinals are JPEGs or NFTs or shitcoins. And as I understand, and I don't know if maybe the client, like the program that's doing this is equating them, or if people are wrongly equating them, but I don't see how the NFTs and the shitcoins being issued, these things are inscriptions, which granted, ordinals are what enabled this because you have to be able to keep track of the transfers that are taking place. But these are inscriptions are ways to pack arbitrary information into a transaction script. And you know, one thing that's like really kind of fascinating about all of this is that to think about the game theory and the incredible difficulty in engineering an open network, an adversarial network, when you have to take all of these considerations into account and how people might use these things. And that's exactly why Bitcoin was designed as it was designed, and why it's so important to be insanely conservative with any changes or thinking about how these things affect it, because we are stewards of the time chain. And it's very easy for an unintended consequence or having slightly too expanded use case or a feature set on something that can turn into an attack vector. So part of me is just a little bit like, this is fascinating to think about how, you know, judging the game theory and the incentives between just packing this thing full of data that's irrelevant versus using it for sound money. But I don't want to get ahead of myself. Inscriptions are a way to pack arbitrary data in. And the explanation that I read, again, I haven't like technically broke down. I didn't read any white paper or anything like this. It was some article. But that you can do, you know, basic if-else sort of statements in Bitcoin script. And then that's where you would place, you know, keys and hashes and all of these things. And instead of doing that, instead of placing keys and hashes in the if-else statements, you can just basically keep doing a bunch of arbitrary script calls and just put it with packets. You know, let's say you've got like a limit of 80 bytes or 80 bits or something for, you know, sticking in an if statement or something like that. I don't know what it is, whatever the limit is, but, well, Why do I need to put a signature in that? Why do I need to put a key or a hash in there? Why not just stick 1/500th of a JPEG image in that, just a little packet, and then do else and do another packet and if else and just whatever, just make a bunch of arbitrary calls and just keep sticking in packets of my JPEG until my transaction is freaking huge, because it's, you know, one UTXO, it's one address with just this huge arbitrary bunch of scripting that is actually just there, squeeze all the information for a JPEG into a Bitcoin transaction. And with multiple improvements, a combination of improvements that have happened in the past, soft forks that have happened on Bitcoin, first segregated witness and then Taproot, essentially there is no limit on the size of the signature data. So they can just kind of pack it in until it reaches the max transaction size, which is 1 megabyte. While if you've heard anyone mention about the discount, the 75% discount for signature data, that was implemented at the same time as SegWit. And this was actually a good thing. This actually made logical sense in for exactly this problem, actually, to disincentivize UTXO bloat. And I'll explain it in detail in just a minute. But essentially what it did is it corrected an imbalance between spending and creating UTXOs such that there was essentially an incentive already to bloat the UTXO set. So actually, a way you might think about it is that because there were different costs in creating a UTXO and spending a UTXO, it's not so much that it's a discount for signature data as it is a correction for an imbalance between the entry side of a UTXO set and the exit side of a UTXO set. But in combination, this make a script as big as you want, which was also for the point of, like, we don't know how many, because of Taproot, another little technicality here, is Taproot runs on Schnorr signatures. And because you can essentially create an unlimited or a very, very big tree of signatures and all sorts of stuff, you know, fees are going to be high. Like, we're talking about, like, fees like $6, $7 today. This will, at some point, the whole purpose of the Bitcoin subsidy and security model is that fees will be very, very high one day. It'll probably still be, you know, 20 or 30 years before it needs to be, like, $40 to $50 for every single block of transaction that gets put on chain, but it will probably be that high. If this becomes a global standard, the vast majority of people will be operating with Bitcoin, will be interacting with Bitcoin in large pools of, you know, commitment sort of transactions on the Lightning Network. I think a Lightning wallet will be the entry point for quote unquote sovereignty, and Bitcoin will be thought of as a court that you have to pay $50 or $100 in order to get your quote unquote case seen for moving large amounts of capital. And I think that's an inevitability, just like we already went through this huge transition. We'll have to rethink how this is going to work and how we interact with it. And, you know, we need this long span of time to develop and incentivize and have these points of pressure to move things to higher layers. I think this will be another boon for the Lightning Network in the short to midterm, because it only reveals the obviousness of where this is going and the fact that we do need to be preparing for this and we do need to be thinking about it like this. So I don't really think having this pressure right now is so deeply negative in the context of, again, I don't think the fees are the issue here. But going back to Taproot, is because that will be our interaction with it, we will likely have very large, very complex trees of alternative paths and commitment payouts and these sorts of things in a single UTXO. And one prediction that I made some numerous years ago, I think probably back in 2017, there's probably a tweet for it somewhere, I don't know. But I said something along the lines of, and I still believe this wholly and completely today, is that the idea of one person owning a single UTXO entirely on their own will become a pretty rare thing in the distant future of Bitcoin. That the overwhelming majority of people who interact with Bitcoin will be part of a Fediment network, will be part of a large multisig, will be part of a channel pool, whether they even know it or not, of a Lightning node or a Lightning network or an off-chain, a hierarchical channel system, which is a whole other thing, actually, that landed kind of recently. But just the idea that it will be a layer two or a layer three technology or protocol of some sort that utilizes the tank-like value and assurance of a Bitcoin transaction and extends it into an entirely new network and a series of security and ownership trade-offs. So I think having a large space. Now, what Taproot does in Schnorr signatures is that on the front end, when you're making the transaction, you actually only have the Taproot. You only have a single signature or the root of this large signature tree and all of these potential paths that you can have in some big joint agreement or a 999 of 1,000 multi-sig or whatever it is. You literally actually only have to publish to the chain this tiny little piece of data. However, on the back end, whatever tree, whatever branch, so in the context of like a taproot, is that it's like you have multiple different branches for how you can spin this thing. Is it you could wait 10 days and spin it with these two keys. You can spin it now with these seven keys. You can, you can wait 30 days and spin it with these other two keys. You can wait a year and spin it with just this one key, etc. Like you can just have all these different paths, these options. Now, for all of the people that are involved, if everyone just kind of agrees with all the separate keys and what's going on, is that you can all just kind of sign it collectively and never even really reveal any of the branches that were possible in this script and publish it like a normal transaction. It's still just got like one signature because you can combine signatures with Taproot. However, and signature data is the big part of the transaction data, just to also make that clear. But if you're spending that transaction, if you're trying to get a valid signature for that, and you're only using one of those branches, you're using one of the alternative branches that's not just the fulfillment of all the keys. Let's say you waited 10 days and you spin it from, the two keys or whatever, which was one of the possible paths. Well, then what you have to do is you have to reveal that one branch of the tree and prove that that hash or that signature does in fact unlock the root according to those conditions. Now, someone on the front end, when that transaction is originally made and it's sent to that address, you can't see the tree. You can't see the different options if you're using Taproot and Schnorr signatures. But whatever option or path is actually used to unlock it does have to be revealed in the signature. But because the Schnorr signature can be condensed down, it can literally be 1,000 keys, well, you don't want to have some conflicting limit on how complex you can make the tree. So in on the back end, you don't know exactly, I guess you technically do when you're constructing the transaction, how big each path would be. But still, if you need 999 signatures, you don't want to be putting a few kilobyte caps on the signature data, because you may literally have, it might not be a super complex setup that genuinely needs that much data. And there are probably a lot of really important and fascinating use cases for mutual arrangements and shared custody of UTXOs and of Bitcoin balances that could use pretty significant signature trees. So now, the discount. What does that mean and what the hell is it for? So to put it simply, the signature discount for SegWit, think about it like this. Best way to do it is probably with an example. So first off, the discount is because when you send Bitcoin to an address versus when you spend the address, the UTXO. So the UTXO set, again, we've talked about this in the Bitcoin basics, but just in case, the UTXOs are all of the active Bitcoin balances. They're the latest place that a Bitcoin was sent, and therefore someone could spend from those. Now, all of the history of Bitcoin is still there. So, like, if somebody sends a Bitcoin to me, and then I send a Bitcoin to you, you have the UTXO, and everybody needs to keep your address in their RAM, in their memory, listening for new Bitcoin transactions, because you are the one who has the balance. My transaction is still there because my transaction is necessary to prove that yours is valid. It needs to be traced all the way back to when that Bitcoin was mined. But mine is no longer a UTXO because it's been spent. That address no longer has anything in it. So it can confirm my transaction and the transaction before that and the transaction before that and then when that Bitcoin was mined, and then it knows that your transaction is valid. It followed all the rules. The Bitcoin exists. It's being fully audited. All of that good stuff, all of the validation, all the rules have been followed, and that you have the opportunity, you have the ability to spend it. And so all of our other transactions in that chain can be validated and then just kind of discarded or just put on the hard drive and dealt with later. And only if anybody needs it is it necessary. Your transaction, your UTXO, needs to be kept in RAM, in the live memory on a computer. And so UTXO bloat really increases the cost of running a node because, you know, if you only have 8 gigs of RAM and you have billions of people using Bitcoin and they each have multiple UTXOs, multiple addresses, well, then suddenly the RAM cost of running a node becomes really, really high because ultimately that's a lot of data. So why did SegWit discount the signature data and what does it have to do with this? So originally, going back to an example, is that if, let's say, I have a wallet and I have 0.1 Bitcoin, three addresses, I have had three transactions sent to me. I have 0.1 Bitcoin, 0.1 Bitcoin, and 0.3 Bitcoin. Now, if I am sending a transaction to someone, I'm sending a transaction to you of 0.2 Bitcoin, well, there is actually an incentive for me to create a new UTXO, to add to the UTXO bloat, and spend it from my 0.3 address. Why? Because my 0.3 address is fewer UTXOs, is fewer addresses than spending it from both of the 0.1. When I have to include both of the 0.1, I now have two signatures and two addresses, which is a lot more data to publish to the chain. However, as a steward of the network and putting load onto other nodes, that is actually the more cost-effective from the public perspective, from the tragedy of the commons perspective, is that my individual incentive is different from the incentive or from the best practices from the context of the network as a whole. So a wallet that is trying to economize, that is trying to get me the lowest cost transaction, because all the signature data is on the spending side, not on the receiving side, is going to grab the 0.3 Bitcoin address and spend the 0.2 from that. And then I am still going to have three UTXOs because I got a change address now of 0.1, 0.1, and 0.1. And you have a single UTXO of 0.2. We expanded the UTXO set. Whereas with the discount, is it shifts the cost to the UTXO set away from the signature. So that essentially the cost on the front end of creating a new UTXO is roughly equal to the cost on the back end of spending that UTXO. So it doesn't even disincentivize the UTXO bloat, so to speak. It just makes it so it's not an economic decision, so that it's the same. Because right now, or before SegWit, because of the signature data that now had to be put in the transaction, it costs a lot more to spend a UTXO, an address, than it does to create it. But after segregated witness, after this signature cost balancing, now it's basically the same, or that was the intent at least. And that's also what it did for a very long time. So how does this relate to inscriptions and ordinals? Well, let's take a break for our sponsor and we'll get into that in just a moment.
Swan Bitcoin! Did you know that you could automatically buy Bitcoin all the time, just like every week, every month, and you didn't even have to like go do it, and then they just zip it right up to you in your own cold keys, and that is automatic too. I do that once and it just runs all the time. So when I'm shooting stuff, I'm stacking Bitcoin, and when I need to know what's going on in space, I have updates all the time. And they even tell me what shitcoin exchanges are about to blow up so I can tell my friends to get their crypto crap out of FTX or whatever and put it back into Bitcoin and just take it over to Swan. I mean, they shouldn't have been doing that shit anyway. And if they'd been reading on some Swan Bitcoin, they would have known that. And if you want to be like all responsible and have like a retirement account, apparently it's like super easy to do that too. But you can check it all out if you just go swanbitcoin.com/guy. And they got like stuff and stuff. You should check it out.
So, before SegWit and the signature discount, the basic economic incentives of a wallet was to create more UTXOs than it was to spend UTXOs. And thus, there was a discount for signature data, and UTXOs, in comparison, were made more costly. However, when we're talking about JPEGs, when we're talking about shitcoin transactions, these are actually instilled, these are stamped into UTXOs that are never meant to be spent in the first place. In fact, because of all of this arbitrary spending data, were all of just like nonsense script information that's just slamming in packets of JPEGs. None of that can actually be fulfilled from a cryptographic standpoint, so it's unspendable. If it was spendable, it would be even that more costly in order to spend it, which is the imbalance that it was trying to solve. However, the creation of these new UTXOs that now have to be kept in RAM forever because they are quote-unquote valid Bitcoin transactions that could potentially be spent one day, well, it means all of this data for creating this UTXO is sort of getting a discount in an effort to balance it against a spending transaction to destroy that UTXO that's never even going to come, that can't even take place. And by having this, these huge JPEG transactions are technically paying less of a fee for their data while contributing to UTXO bloat, and thus increasing the data needed to store to run a node, the validation costs, the computation costs, all of these things. Again, this isn't the end of the world. Like, we were going to have full blocks. It's good to have full blocks. But I think it's perfectly fair to call this spam because it's just got nothing to do with Bitcoin ownership. And now I've argued with a number of different people on Twitter and in a number of different platforms and places. And I don't even discount some of the arguments, like Danny Deasy, who's, you know, made some NFTs or whatever, and he's, you know, we went back and forth quite a bit on Twitter about it. And he rightfully says, you know, like, this is a subjective determination, that this is equivalent to pooping in the park. And I completely agree that whether or not NFTs are valuable is subjective. Whether or not shitcoins are of any value is subjective. But I do not think it is subjective that the stewardship, that the purpose of the Bitcoin time chain, or the highest value of the Bitcoin time chain, is in maintaining a sound, censorship-resistant global money. It is in maintaining the consensus rules and the security and ability to secure the Bitcoin canonical history, to make sure that the time chain is doing what the time chain does. And there's two different reasons why I think it's objective. One is that the only reason you can trade things is because you have a sound, reliable monetary signal in order to do so, is because we have money that we can exchange back and forth, which means any individual utility, money ends up reflecting the value of all utility, right? It ends up reflecting the value of food, of making cars, of drive, of wanting to go places, of wanting to stay home. Like, everything that happens in an economy ends up becoming a mirror, the money of that economy, of that network, ends up becoming a mirror image of all of those utilities. That's why you don't want money to be good at one thing over another, other than just being good money. Like, for instance, the market for jewelry or the market for electronics probably is a better example, just because it's newer, actually distorts the price of gold in relation to electronics differently than the price of gold is for other industries and for other goods and items, because gold would actually be consumed in the process or in the market for electronics, and it's used, and it would be used not for its monetary properties. It would be valued not because of its money characteristics, but because of its conductivity and its malleability. But the reason money works, the reason money is great, is because its value in relation to any individual utility or any industry or any product or service is equal. That its relationship to all of those things is the same, because you specifically don't use money for anything other than money. It's not a consumable good. You don't eat money. You don't make shirts out of it. It's not part of the production process of anything. It doesn't get consumed. It's simply there to allocate and organize the consumption and production of all of these other goods. So gold is actually a worse money in relation to pricing electronics than it is as a money in relation to pricing everything else, because it can be used in electronics and still is. Granted, it's tiny, but still, that's an example. So in this same context, going back to ordinals and inscriptions and stamping crap into the blockchain, is that the only reason stamping shit into the blockchain is valuable is because the time chain works, it's resilient, it's secure, and there's hundreds of thousands of nodes securing and validating and protecting this thing. And the only reason it's worthwhile to sell a bunch of shitty NFTs or a bunch of shitcoin tokens is because you can then get sound digital global money for those things. And you participate in a broader monetary network, which means both the delivery mechanism and the value of these things is a derivative of the value and the purpose of Bitcoin, which means this is objectively shit in the context or in the comparison to what the purpose of Bitcoin is, to the more important data set in the Bitcoin time chain. So maybe an analogy to kind of back up this argument that I think this is an objective hierarchy of what is valuable and what is not, is to imagine there's a machine that can do a lot of different things, but that it's the only machine that can produce food, water, and shelter for everyone who uses it. However, in order to do this, it can only do it in a certain amount or to a certain degree, and you essentially are vying for your spot in the line to get this machine to give food, water, and shelter to everybody. Now, this machine can also scan photocopies of people's asses. Now, it doesn't break the machine, and it's probably only funny or interesting because you're using such a critical and important machine to do something that is stupid and frivolous. But if it is affecting someone else's ability to get food, water, and shelter from that machine, I think I can objectively call that behavior stupid and frivolous, because it is specifically using the machine for its lowest purposes rather than its highest. And I can already anticipate an argument that, like, oh, it's the person who will pay the most for it. But that's not the part of Bitcoin we're talking about. We're not talking about the fee for the transaction itself. We're talking about the costs and the resiliency of the network, of the stewardship of the network, which is a public good, which does have the tragedy of the commons problem. It's the same as discussing whether or not somebody is creating more UTXOs or fewer UTXOs, is that that's not necessarily bad for them, and there's nothing genuinely negative about it outside of the fact that it raises the cost of securing and validating the network for other people by economizing for the individual when the signature imbalance is the way it used to be. We're talking about those things being at odds. We're not talking about an individual transaction or how much someone else is willing to pay to get food, water, and shelter out of this machine, and that, oh, you're willing to pay more to get a photocopy of your ass. We're talking about the fact that everyone who is running the machine is doing so to try to provide food, water, and shelter for everyone, and now they have to process your ass photocopy forever into the future to keep the machine running smoothly. And it might just mean that a few people stop helping to maintain the machine because there's too many photocopies of asses on it. Because it just so happens those are slightly more data and maintenance intensive things to manage for the machine than the food, water, and the shelter. Now, that's a dumb analogy, but I think it illustrates the point that in the context of whether or not these are trading cards and, you know, NFTs or shitcoin tokens are actually useful in some context is largely irrelevant, because I think it must be, by necessity, it must be subservient to the maintenance and operation of the network itself. So the question, I guess, is what do you do about it? You know, you don't want to set the precedent that, like, when it was just NFTs, I mean, I guess it makes perfect sense that it would be shitcoin tokens anyway, but I just didn't think anybody would do that. Not because of any altruistic reason or, like, the Bitcoin didn't work for shitcoins. It's just because there's, like, multiple protocols already to do shitcoins. There's RGB, there's Counterparty. Like, these things are old, old protocols. Now, there's Taro, there's Liquid. I mean, there's so many different ways to do this on Bitcoin. Why the excitement about ordinals? Like, why the sudden excitement of BRC tokens and just making all of this stuff all of a sudden? Like, did all these people not realize that there's all these other different ways that you could do this whole time? But in that also makes me think that this is just pure hype. That this is all going to die down, kind of like NFTs did on the first time around and has multiple times. It just kind of keeps It just kind of keeps having a resurgence because, I mean, the crypto market arguably has done largely the same thing. Because it has to battle with the new people coming in over and over again. Like the ignorance argument and the novelty of it has an entirely new audience that has no idea what is going on over and over and over again. And every hype cycle, that audience explodes. And I think probably what's happening is just the novelty of doing this explicitly in the Bitcoin chain, like straight up on the chain in the block data, is just like the new cool thing. But you give it enough time, it's going to be like, oh, well, this is still just NFTs and shitcoins. But let's say it is a persistent problem. And this does have a meaningful impact because the script data for these NFTs, because they are only on the front side, there's no spending of these UTXOs. It's just pure UTXO bloat because they're not intended to be. They can't be spent. That's why they're made, or that's how they're made. So it essentially has this SegWit discount in preparation of balancing the act when you're spending that UTXO, but it's giving that discount to a UTXO that's never going to be spent. So does that counter, does the benefit or the discount for creating, for that UTXO bloat, counter the incentive to consolidate or to create more UTXOs rather than consolidate, that the balancing act of the script cost or the signature cost with SegWit was trying to correct? I don't think we know yet, and I don't think we can make that measurement today about whether or not it means a net UTXO bloat if we leave or we don't disincentivize this behavior in some way, because it may just peter out on its own. It may just kind of become meaningless. And there is also something called, and we talked about this recently actually in the LOL Elites piece that we just did, about UTXO, which is potentially a way to mitigate. It's a client-side improvement that would do wonders to mitigate the consequence of the UTXO bloat, the costs associated with it, so to speak, in running a node. So maybe there are just solutions from a cryptographic sense or from a management sense, and now we have to just deal with this kind of new reality, this new element of how Bitcoin is going to be used in order to, we have to fine tune again, right? Is that we have to address this new thing that is now on the chain, that we have to figure out how to mitigate the costs of it because it has fallen to the tragedy of the commons. There is this cost and this burden being put on node runners and on the validation process that ought not be there, but maybe it can be mitigated locally, or maybe it can just be mitigated by further efficiency or optimization, like the many, many different optimizations and honing down to exactly what needs to be done, and you know what tricks and hash tables and trees and all of these things, filters and things that we can do. Maybe it is just something as simple as UTXO that allows us to hold a root hash of all the potential UTXOs that can be spent, and then you just on the client side adopt that filtering mechanism or that UTXO mechanism on the node. And without a soft fork or without a hard fork or anything, you do wonders to mitigate that cost to that issue. Then another potential solution, which I think it was Francis Puyo who was talking about this. I don't know. I saw this, and this is a really intriguing idea. But it goes back to whether or not the imbalance with signatures before SegWit and the imbalance with incentivizing shitcoining and pooping in the park post ordinals, how do those each weigh, is removing the discount. Because this can actually be done without a soft fork. This can be done totally client-side of nodes, where I could update my node policy just on my computer, basically, that says I no longer discount, I calculate what goes into the block based on my mempool, based on the transactions that I received purely by the bytes, purely not by the signature weight or the UTXO weight and, you know, doing some clever discount thing. It's not part of the consensus rules. And it's purely just whether or not how I organize my mempool, the transactions that I think are going to go into the next block. And so we could in mass, like you could put it into the Bitcoin Core client, you could push to have everybody update, and we could increase the cost of pooping in the park. We could increase the cost of shitcoining and stamping NFTs into this by having them pay that cost of the signature up front, full on, the same as the UTXO cost. And then that might help mitigate the UTXO bloat on the ordinal and inscription side of things, but it may lead to an increase in the problem. Like, I don't even know how much that balancing act of those incentives has made a huge difference in the UTXO bloat. There's probably some solid measurement somewhere as to how effective was this. You know, solid incentives are a big deal. And I also don't think that removing that discount would necessarily, like I don't think the discount really completely fixes the UTXO bloat issue to begin with. It just puts the incentives in the right place. And I don't think removing it and leaning that cost towards inscription and for paying for all of that scripting data will get rid of shitcoins or will get rid of NFTs. Like, they're just willing to pay tons of fees in order to put a photocopy of their ass into this machine. So I don't think there's a, we should jump the gun and just immediately remove the SegWit discount. We should start running this client or whatever. But I think there is a really important conversation to be had about where the balance in those incentives lie. Because again, this is a public utility. This does fall to the tragedy of the commons issue. Like, my brother actually wrote an article about it during the block size war, because that was the same issue. That was the same failure to understand the problem, that the block size is a tragedy of the commons issue, is that in order to have the most people, have the individual be able to use it from a fee perspective, it had to be difficult. Raising the block size made it more difficult to make it run, or to run it and to validate it and to manage the chain, the entire network itself, and the entire system efficiently and easily from the side of the node runners, from the perspective of those who were maintaining the network itself. So I think that's a important conversation to have. Does this justify removing the signature discount? Now, in the context of what can be done about this, I do not believe censoring transactions is smart at all. I do not believe anything that involves a soft fork or hard fork is even slightly worth the trade-off. At the end of the day, this is just a bunch of arbitrary crap in transactions, and it's not as if we were expecting there to never be full blocks. Like, we should have, this was designed to survive this, like I have said. But another idea that my brother actually mentioned just a little while ago on the phone, which I thought was actually kind of cool, and it's more of a olive branch, maybe, so to speak, or potentially would reveal the intentions of what's going on here, because a lot of people are saying this is a deliberate spam attack. But the thing about anchoring something, because none of the Bitcoin consensus rules matter, none of the shitcoin consensus rules or the NFT rules or the ordinal rules have anything to do with the Bitcoin consensus rules. Like, stamping all of this stuff into the chain is not really relevant to whether or not it actually exists or whether or not it actually does anything. Like, you can just do this with hashes. You can do this in a tap script and just produce the tap root and then prove that it is still exactly that, like that it's entirely that JPEG or that thing that has been stamped into the signature into this transaction without actually putting all of the data on there. And it would be a far more efficient way to have the same level of provenance. And it would cost way, way less in transaction fees. and obviously wouldn't bloat the chain. It would still have UTXO bloat, but it would make a meaningful difference. Is rewrite or fork the client for the ordinals and the inscriptions and literally do it while just anchoring it to the chain, and then essentially sell it as a cheaper way to accomplish the same task, to have the same level of assurances. I mean, probably they won't switch over to it. They probably like the fact that they're just like forcing all this garbage into the chain. In fact, like the Antima morons, for lack of a better word, who basically go crap in the park and take selfies with it, and then literally think they're special because they took a crap in the park and don't really care about the park and don't care about what any of it means. It may very well be that it's only if they are crapping in the park that it's interesting that they get to do this at all. Like, that's why they didn't use RGB or they didn't use counterparty, because it doesn't really bloat the chain in the same way. And that's actually all they wanted to do. Granted, they're poking fun at, like, the dumbest maxis who don't even really understand the problem and then propose rather absurd solutions, quote-unquote. But it would at least be interesting to isolate what exactly the goal is if you made an alternative client that cost a whole lot less, if they would still just burn resources to do it a different way or to do it the worse way. Now, some people are literally saying that we need to undo Taproot or SegWit or block ordinals. None of that is going to succeed. Not only do I think a fork is way worse than just putting up with the situation as it is, like a lot worse, actually, but undoing any of these things is actually almost, is necessarily a hard fork. I don't even think you can soft fork any of this stuff out. And then to attempt to block ordinal transactions, I don't see how there's any way that we can do that in which it's not just really easy to get around. And if we're talking about some sort of consensus rule about like the size of script, again, that is necessarily a hard fork, because we already have things in the chain that would violate that rule that we would be creating. Like, it either is valid for the entire history. That's why soft fork has to restrict the rules. It can't expand the rules. Because if you can't validate the full history of it, if there's something in the history that validates the current rules, well, then you're not able to validate everything. You have this introduction of trust where the rules changed. So not only do I think that's not even a good trade-off just on its face, because I don't think there was anything wrong with SegWit or Taproot, but like slightly higher maintenance costs of the chain and UTXO bloat is a lot easier to deal with than trying to undo something like that. Or, and in the context of like trying to block ordinal transactions, there's no way, like, it's just going to be too easy to get around that sort of blocking or censoring or anything on chain. I don't think there's any feasible way to do that. It's too easy to, like, you can't, because it's not part of the Bitcoin consensus rules, and the information itself is just arbitrary, it's just hidden. It's going to be like trying to block Bitcoin transactions from being broadcast from a different mechanism. You can, you know, Andreas talks about it, like, you can encode them into a bunch of emojis and send them over Twitter, or you can send them over Morse code on a telegraph line or something. There's nothing really stopping them from just changing what they're doing. And any attempt to identify or specifically detail out this particular mechanism is just going to be too easy to get around. And then you're just going to fork, or you're just going to have a problem with the rest of the nodes on the network. And if you don't get it, there's nothing feasible about those options. Like, the idea of bringing those up, I think, is just largely ignorant of the real problem, and particularly of the costs it would take to do anything about it in that way. However, all of that being said, I think there is a legitimate conversation to have. If someone is pooping in the park, I think we should sit down and talk about, is there a proper way? Is there an easy, extremely low-risk way to disincentivize this? And honestly, I would be for it. I mean, given obvious caveats about what that issue was or what the mechanism was. I mean, I'm intrigued by the idea of removing the discount just on the client side, just in simple node policy. But I think there is a lot of wiggle room or a lot of argument to be made as to whether or not that worsens the UTXO problem in a different way while still not properly stopping anyone. Like, it won't have like a meaningful amount of traffic difference on ordinals and inscriptions and shitcoins, BRC tokens or whatever on Bitcoin in the short term and probably even in the midterm. But if we already think in the long term that this thing's just going to fizzle out like it has in the past, well, then do we just let it run its course? And if it does stick around in some capacity, okay. You know, it's not like, again, the fees are not the problem. If somebody's telling you that the high fees are the problem, they're just not recognizing the trajectory that Bitcoin was on and the necessity of the fee market going forward. And the fact that we're probably going to need Taproot and SegWit and these signature schemes still to mitigate that and to have those complex multi-sig and UTXO sharing arrangements in order to still have trustless or extremely trust minimized relationships on chain while still batching enormous amounts of transactions, whether it's on Lightning, whether it's on channel pools and Fediments and the plethora of other networks and mechanisms by which we can leverage the security and resiliency of Bitcoin's base layer to extend it to everyone in the world, to extend that security and that soundness to everyone. So anyway, I wanted to take a day and just have a conversation about that, just because it's like the thing right now, and also make sense of it for people who are not sure what is going on or, you know, got a really rough version of it. Granted, this is still a little bit rough, but I think it's probably a clearer picture as to what the problem is and what can be done about it. But I just think it's worthwhile to start a conversation. I think it's perfectly fair to consider that this might need to be disincentivized. And what might that look like if it was possible to do so with little to no risk? So anyway, anyone who listens, you got any great ideas, share them. Tweet it out, boost, or send me a message on Fountain. I'm intrigued. I've heard a couple of interesting ideas already. But let me know. We will be back tomorrow with another read. A huge thank you to our sponsors, to Swan Bitcoin, to Fold, and to CoinKite for making this show possible. And I will catch you all on the next episode of Bitcoin Audible. And until then, everybody, please quit pooping in the park. Money is one of the greatest instruments of freedom ever invented by man. It is money which, in existing, society opens an astounding range of choice to the poor man, a range greater than that which not many generations ago was open only to the wealthy. F.A. Hayek.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.